bunches with the heart of darkness. Going to blows with your fear and gone. You never know until it's stripped away. The part of you has got to die to change. In the morning you gon' need an answer. Ain't nobody gonna change the standard. It's not enough to just feel the flame. You gotta burn your old self away. Hold on tight a little longer. What don't kill you make you stronger. Get back up, cause it's a fall of. You can't change without a fallout. It's gonna hurt, but don't you slow down. Get back up, cause it's a fall of.
I know the situation can't be right, and all you ever do is fight. There's a reason that the road is long. It takes some time to make your courage strong.
Hold on tight a little longer. What don't kill you make you stronger. Get back up, cause it's a fall of. You can't change without a fallout. It's gonna hurt, but don't you slow down. Get back up, cause it's a fall of.
Yeah.
When the war's coming, hunt me down.
I will face them all
and stand my ground.
Cause
there's a fire burning deep, and they will see my strength in this love.
It's hard love. God loves you. Good morning. This is Listen Up. Jesus is on the air. I'm Katharina Vidi, and I'm just so excited here today. I have some friends, a new friend, and Doug, who is my friend from Stony Brook, and we have Bridget here as well. Two young people, and I'm just so inspired right now. It's just going to be such a great show, and thank you so much for coming, for, you know, taking your time, your Saturday morning to share with us today. You know, it's really appreciated. And this is Listen Up. Jesus is on the air, and our call-in number, if you would like to call in, is 631-888-8811, and our text-in number is 516-784-6081. Please feel free to call in, text in. We're going to be talking about some great topics, such as the Lord of the Rings, vocations, saints, and Bridget's experience. So a lot of great stuff here, so stay tuned, and we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to, if you're a big Lord of the Rings fan, if, you know, you just anything, please feel free. And so I just wanted to mention as well another event that's going on at the Coffee House in St. Francis of Assisi Church in Greenlawn on Friday, July 28th. There's going to be a musician that's at 8:30. It's like a little concert that's going to start. And the doors open at 8, and it's welcome for all young people. Even older, all are welcome to relax, enjoy some music. The man's name is Benjamin Myers, and it's going to be really great. And a nice place just to hang out, have some coffee. And it's in, again, it's at St. Francis of Assisi Church in Greenlawn on Friday night, July 28th. Starting at 8 o'clock p.m. So yeah, that's a little housekeeping here. But we have Bridget, and she went to Franciscan University in Steubenville, Ohio, and she's 23 years old, and she's just going to share with us how her family was part of a Christian sect of the church. Can you explain what it was called again? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Thank you, Katerina. It was a schismatic church.
Schismatic. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my journey to Franciscan, which is a wonderful place, was kind of unique. I think when I first growing up, I was not a part of the faith, as in we weren't part in full communion with the church. We weren't under the Pope. So basically, we would go to a Latin Mass that was pre-Vatican II in the 1950s, and it was almost like a time capsule where we didn't believe that there was a Pope, and that anything that happened after like the 1950s didn't actually exist. And so my dad and his siblings all grew up in that, and I went to school there. We had sisters that taught us that were from the schismatic church, and it was it's a unique experience because I was technically Catholic, but it wasn't in the fullness of the faith, and it wasn't like free as like Catholic in full communion with Rome. But so like growing up there, I think there were definitely things that made me who I am today. When I was younger, like the faith was very important to that church, especially to the schismatics, because we read about the saints, and we were very much interested in like the faith and the importance, and there's a lot of beauty in that I think sometimes other people like don't grow up with as much. So I was fortunate to grow up with that, even though it wasn't in full communion with Rome. And there were a lot of good aspects, but they were all taken from the church as it, the fullness of the truth. So my parents, they came to understand that the church in Rome was important, and there is a Pope. So after I was in second grade, we began to come back to the faith. We would still go to the Latin Mass. At the time, it wasn't really a big thing to go to the Latin Mass until like Pope Benedict allowed it more frequently. So we would go to New York City and different Society of St. Peter in New Jersey. Eventually, we would come to grow to love the faith and appreciate like the English Mass and as well as the Latin Mass, and I think it gave me an appreciation just for the liturgy in general, and how important it is and how beautiful it can be, and how it can be celebrated. And after that, I was homeschooled for a number of years, which gave me an opportunity just to like grow in my faith and to experience. We had a curriculum Seton that would always incorporate like everything Catholic into whatever we were learning, like religion, science, English, history, you name it. So I think like my journey to Franciscan was in a sense like a culmination of like everything, because I like learned about like the beauty of like the Latin Mass and the beauty of the faith from a traditional point of view, but also like the joy of the gospel and like God's mercy, which was very much emphasized when I got to Franciscan, and like how much like God's like, you know, your faith should be something of joy as well as not just like what you do, like if you shouldn't do this or you shouldn't do that, like black and white kind of stuff, but just like God's mercy is endless, and like the faith is something that is joy filled. So just coming to Franciscan and realizing that like really helped me to grow deeper in my faith, and particularly like in my relationship with God. It wasn't just about like what I should do or what I shouldn't do, but it was more than that, and it became like deeper. So I was very grateful to go to Franciscan and to really have that understanding of, you know, who I am and how my relationship with God is.
So let's just so for our listeners, Franciscan University, is it a Catholic university?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and I just had a question. I know you said about the schismatic church, and you were taught by sisters at Franciscan. Were some of them schismatic as well, or just all?
The sisters that I was taught with in first and second grade were from schismatic order.
Oh, and then once your family, I guess, decided to go more to the Catholic masses, and that's when it changed, right?
Yes. Then I was homeschooled, and then I eventually went to Kellenberg and, you know, Franciscan. So, yeah.
Oh, good. Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah, no problem.
So would you say that the Latin Mass was really influential in your journey towards the Catholic faith, and you know, what did you enjoy about it that you felt maybe was a little different than your other the other sect?
I think it definitely the Latin Mass helped me in my faith. I think more so as an adult. As a kid, you just kind of are going through the motions, and mm-hmm. you like you see everything, you're taking everything in, but you don't really understand like where to put it necessarily. So I think one of the things I really appreciate about the Latin Mass is just the silence, because I think it's so busy and so noisy in the world today, and so I love going and just being able to be silent, and I think that's the biggest thing for me for the Latin Mass. Like I love going to the English Mass too, it doesn't matter to me, but like with the Latin Mass I appreciate it for the silence.
So like during the Mass there'll be concrete moments of silence in the Latin Mass?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, and the priest he usually whispers the words, so you can't so you don't like hear what he says all the time, and if there's no singing or anything, it's just complete silence, and you're just there worshiping God, and I think that's really beautiful.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah, I mean I would highly recommend the Latin Mass as well if anyone has never experienced it too, and I know Doug really loves the Latin Mass, and last time he came on the show for the first time, he was mentioning his journey towards Catholicism and how he the Latin Mass was really key, and he fell in love with it. So just mention to us a little bit about what you enjoy particularly about the Latin Mass, or remind us today.
Yeah, I find I agree with Bridget that the silence in a world so busy and loud, it's a safe haven for just thinking and prayer. I was struck by the beauty of the music. That was, I think, the first strike. The first thing that struck my mind when I first
struck
went into
to a
high mass at St. Matthew's in Dix Hills. I loved the reverence of the priests and the people. It really, for me, is like a place for refuge after a week of just, you know, busyness, and it's always, you know, very similar. Of course, it's like the mass is. That just a place where I can enter into prayer more deeply than in other, you know, forms of worship. I also go to the Novus Ordo, the English Mass, or I've been more recently going to a Ruthenian liturgy in Smithtown, which is Byzantine Rite. But I think of all the different forms, the Latin Mass is still my favorite.
Your favorite.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what is, tell us about the Ruthenian, how is that different, the Byzantine Rite?
Okay, it's based, as the Roman Rite is based on Rome, the Byzantine Rite grew up is the liturgy based in Constantinople, so in the East, and in some ways it's very similar to the Latin Mass. It's very, you know, very priest-focused, very centralized, very reverent, quiet at some points. There's more... it's kind of interesting because it's like a crossover between the modern English Mass and the Latin Mass, where the people are very involved in making the responses and singing, but it, you know, has the iconostasis of the icon screen blocking the sanctuary, so it has very set delineations of, okay, this is the sacred space up front, and you know, normally lay people aren't allowed to go up there, and you know, this is the, you know, the holy bottom. Doors, you mm-hmm. can't go beyond that. So it's very interesting how it combines elements of, you know, very, very traditional Catholicism. And this is, the Ruthenian Rite is in communion with Rome. It's one of the 23 Eastern Rite churches that are part of the Catholic Church. Mm. So they're Catholic priests and everything. They're in communion. So it's very interesting. There's lots, a whole, you know, another dimension of Eastern Rite churches, 23 others besides the Roman Rite.
It's like Bed Bath and Beyond, the Beyond.
Yeah, it's fascinating with all their own customs and traditions. Yeah.
Oh, great! When you're participating in this mass, you can't see the altar essentially.
In the Ruthenian, it depends on the church, but oh, okay. Yeah, typically
during the consecration of the Eucharist and
typically there's a curtain that's over the if there is an opening mm-hmm. in the icon screen, but it depends. The holy doors are the main doors in the middle, and they open up at certain points at different times.
Oh,
so,
wow.
It depends on the time during the liturgy.
Mm-hmm. That's cool, and I'm sure that heightens the sacredness of the event, too, when you can't see. It's like, wow, you know. So great. Thanks so much, Bridget, for sharing about your journey. Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit... about Franciscan University, and I know you said you fell in love with it, and I heard so many great things about it, and that it really helped you grow in your faith. If you don't mind, share with us a little bit about how you grew in your faith there, and what did you study, and just some experiences, if any, come to mind, where you really felt God's love, or you grew closer in relationship to Him, and just anything that comes to mind.
Okay. Yeah, well, Franciscan is a really great place. I think one of the cool things about the faith there is they give you many different opportunities to, like, go to Mass, to go to confession. They have different, like, styles of, like, prayer. So if you're interested in, like, charismatic prayer, they would have, like, you know, they would call them FOPs, Festival of Praises. So it's, like, praise and worship music. But then if you're more traditional, they would have, like, the Latin Mass, you know, or, like, they would have, like, a Spanish Mass, and they would just, like, try to offer as many, like, variety of, like, our faith as possible. And it's a very, like, dynamically Catholic school. One of the cool things about Franciscan is that we have households, which it's kind of like a sorority or a fraternity, but at a Catholic school like Franciscan, it's prayer based, and it's household would have, like, a different charism. So the one I was in was called Beloved First Truth, and it was like Dominican kind of spirituality, and our, like, patron saint was Saint Catherine of Siena, and we're all about, like, truth and, like, you know, finding out like how to live that truth. And so one of the things that we would do is we'd have, like, a study night where we would read, like, different church encyclicals and, like, talk about them. But I think at Franciscan, like, one of the cool things about it is that there's a lot of positive peer pressure, where even if you weren't as into your faith, like, I think maybe when I first got there, I wasn't as interested in, like, trying out as many things or, like, going to daily Mass. But when you get there, everybody's, like, asking you, like, oh, why don't you come with me? Or, like, why don't we do this? And it's all, like, positive peer pressure in that way, uh-huh. To try to, like, get at you involved and just excited about the faith. I studied education and English there. So that was, and I really enjoyed the program. I was in an honors program, which is, like, a great books, and we would read, like, everything from, like, Plato and Aristotle all the way to, like, to modern literature and just talk about it. And it's cool to be at a Catholic campus where, not that everyone thinks the same as you do, because there's many opinions on everything, but you were free to, like, discuss what you believed in and, like, what you felt without, like, people, like, you know, trying to get you to be quiet or anything. And it was just like a, it was good to be able to just talk about your faith in like an environment where, you know, you were free to do so, more than like other college campuses. One thing that like really impacted me was I studied abroad in Austria, with Franciscan, and, program there, they took us to Lourdes. So I served for a week there. And I think that was probably a really powerful experience. St. Bernadette's my confirmation saint. And to go there and to like be where she saw Our Lady was really powerful. And just to like serve the people in Lourdes was something that really like caused me to like definitely grow in my faith and like deepen in my faith.
What did you do when you served in Lourdes?
We worked in the baths, or they call them the piscines there. So you would go in and you would help the people take a bath, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it's a very prayerful experience. Everybody's praying the whole time, praying the rosary outside. And it's very hierarchical. I don't know if that's the right word. But everyone has, like, a job. And, like, there's, like, all these Italian grandmas that they're just like, okay, this is what you're doing. And, like, there's a system to everything.
They take charge.
Yeah, they do. We would pray with the women in the baths and like offer their intentions to Our Lady. And the really cool thing about Lourdes is that once you take a bath, like you're automatically dry when you come out, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even seem weird there, but like afterwards you're like, wait a minute, that is weird. Like, that's crazy.
When you come back, you're like, oh my gosh, yeah. Like, I was actually dry.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just really cool that the same friend that was just this little girl, and like it's just this humble little girl, and then you see what just being open and like surrendering to God can do for you know, so many people. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. That's such a blessing that you're able to grow in your faith and go where your confirmation saint served the Lord. And when you took a bath, did you come out dry
too? Yeah, I did.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and it definitely felt like there was like a grace there. Mm-hmm. Or you just felt more energetic, or you know, there was just something there that was really special, and it, you know, it wasn't like your imagination or anything. It was really powerful.
Mm-hmm. And you just can't describe it. It's just that presence, just mm-hmm. energetic. That's really wonderful. Yeah. Thank you. I liked when you said about St. Catherine of Siena as well, because I guess my name is Gadarina, which is translates to Catherine, and I was actually thinking on my way coming here about the quote that St. Catherine of Siena used a lot, which is, be all that God has called you to be, and you'll set the world on fire. Mm-hmm. So with that energetic, like, transforming power, and that's what God I think is always calling us to. He's calling us to deeper, to be a better person, to sometimes go through hardships and challenges that kind of stretch us, make us feel uncomfortable, or you know, is trying, like he's testing us in the fire. Mm-hmm. I guess and another quote that just came to mind was that in Isaiah, I think it is, that God tests us in the fire, and he molds us and shapes us, like when you put iron in the fire and the blacksmith has to like hit it, like when it's hot, to like mold it and change it, he has to like bang on it. And mm-hmm. it's like sometimes we feel that way. And I also wanted to mention the opening song. I really enjoyed the opening song. Is one of my favorites. It's a new song by Need to Breathe. It's called Hard Love, and just about when you're going through the fire, just to keep on going with God's grace, and that he has a plan. And even though it could be so hard sometimes to keep just keep on going and have that faith, and like you said, having positive people around you, having friends, going to school that uplifted you and that helped you. So mm-hmm. and I just want to say that we're here for you, listeners. We're here for you. If you have any prayer intentions, or just know that we're always praying for you, and we always wish the best for you. So I really like that, and we'll be mentioning a little bit about the saints later in the show today, but that was really great. And was Saint Catherine a Dominican sister?
Yes, I think she became one eventually. She might have been like a third order Dominican, because I don't think she lived in a convent, but she was at least third order Dominican.
Oh, wow. Yeah. See, I just learned something new every day. And yeah, so that's amazing. So we're going to take a little break now and play a song where the Lord calls us to follow him. And then we'll talk about the Lord of the Rings when we come back. Okay, we're back. The Lord calls us to follow him every day. So if you would like to call in, our call-in number is 631-888-8811, and our text-in number is 516-784-6081. We're going to start talking about The Lord of the Rings, such an exciting topic. I know a lot of people like it. Some people don't know about it. Like for me, I don't really know much about it. So Doug is going to share with us today what is that? Like what is that story and who the author is? So
sure. Yeah. Thank you, Katerina. Well, I'm thrilled to talk about it because it's my favorite, I think, of all time, my favorite book that I've read so far.
Oh,
and
great.
Technically there are six books, but really it's known as a trilogy. And it was written by J.R.R. Tolkien, who was an Oxford professor of Anglo-Saxon literature in England. And he's a very famous scholar, quite apart from his work in The Lord of the Rings, in studying in Anglo-Saxon, which is Old English and Middle English. But he wrote The Lord of the Rings in the 1950s, or it was published in the 1950s, and it's an epic story following the adventures of a hobbit and his friends, and they travel across the Middle Earth, which is basically an ancient, you know, more fictional version of our world, Europe, and Tolkien fit the story into his larger mythology, which he'd been working on all his life from a young age in the 1920s and starting with the First World War. And he was always fascinated with language and mythology, especially, you know, northern myth of Scandinavia and the Norse gods. And he was fluent in Old English and Old Norse and you name it, tons and tons of languages, okay. Latin, Greek. But The Lord of the Rings is his story of the destruction of the One Ring. In the story, the Dark Lord Sauron is basically a lieutenant of Satan. in the story, there are more ancient legends that he wrote, you know, in the old days of this fictional world, Middle Earth. The concern, you know, older stories. So it is very much in The Lord of the Rings a sense of history. You know, this is a continuation of older myths, and it's all seen through the hobbit's eyes. They're short, little, you know, half-height people that live in a peaceful place called the Shire. And this ring of power comes into the possession of one who doesn't know its full importance, and his name is Frodo, and he needs to travel to destroy it, because the Dark Lord needs this ring. He's used it in the past to launch a war against the world, and it basically embodies sin and power, and anyone who uses it falls in corruption, in lust for power and for the ring, and they either need to hide it or destroy it to prevent Sauron from regaining it to take over the world and destroy the world.
Oh, so is Frodo a hobbit?
Yes, he is. He and his faithful servant Sam go to Mordor in the end to try to destroy the ring. And I don't want to give it away, but you have to read it.
Oh, okay.
But it's worth well worth the read if you love poetry and mythology and adventure and beauty and all these things. Tolkien put a very much of his Catholic faith into the writing, though it's not explicit in there. So many of the themes and characters and embody a lot of, you know, Catholic ideas.
Can you mention some examples?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, for instance, there's the wizard Gandalf, who is basically, he is called a wizard, but he is more like an angelic being sent to Middle-earth to help the inhabitants fight against evil, who is Sauron, really, in The Lord of the Rings. And he is a messenger sent by God to help the people. And he, at one point, falls and dies battling a demon from the deeps of a cave. They travel through the caverns to get on their quest to Mordor, the Mines of Moria. And Gandalf falls and is later resurrected. So he's very, very
okay.
Christ-like figure.
Like, oh, yeah. You gave it away. but he's resurrected.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
good.
Not one character in The Lord of the Rings, you know, embodies Christ exactly, of course. But there, you know, there's priests, prophet, kings all throughout. You know, Aragorn is the king in exile, and he's another main character. and Frodo and Gandalf, they each have elements of very Christ-like qualities.
Mm-hmm. Like courage.
Mm-hmm. And sacrifice, mm-hmm. especially Aragorn and Frodo. But all of them, really, in some degree.
It's good.
Quite a deep and interesting and complex story.
Mm-hmm. That sounds exciting. And you said it was a trilogy, but there's actually six books?
Yeah, so it was published as a trilogy.
Oh, and then it continued.
It was just at the time, it was more inexpensive to just publish them all, you know, in three big volumes.
Mm-hmm. Well,
but it was really written in six books. Each book in the trilogy has two.
And oh,
it's interesting how it's written. Because mm-hmm. one book follows the stories of the adventures of, you know, a set of characters, and then the next book it flips over to the other ones that you haven't seen in a while. So you're kind of kept in suspense while you're reading. You don't know what's going on,
with
you know,
the
with
others.
Frodo and Sam, and
yeah.
while the other it's following the stories of the other characters.
Oh.
So it's very in that way you just don't want to stop reading.
Yeah, it's exciting because you're frustrated at the same time. You're like
mm-hmm.
you know, I want to know what's going on, but you have to wait and you have to read the other stuff. So we have a listener who's watching actually from Facebook Live, and he said the Eucharist and Lambas. So do you mind mentioning what that is?
And, sure. Yeah.
How that connects? Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm getting really excited that I have to watch the movies and read the books, you know. Do you recommend, which one do you recommend, reading the books
oh,
first?
Oh, books.
The books, yeah.
The movies are good, but books are always better.
Yeah, you can imagine and stuff. But yeah, go ahead.
Well, the Lambas is a great example, too, of it's Elvish waybread that they on their journey into the east, the company of the ring that set out from Rivendell passed through Lothlorien, which is like a sort of a bastion of safety among the elves. They're high elves in the mythology. And they give the travelers bread to take with them on their journey. And they tell the hobbits that the more you live off of this bread alone, the stronger you know, you get, and you can live with it. Just with that for weeks and weeks, and it'll last you, one bite will last a grown man enough for a day's march. So it's very, very interesting. I think later in the trilogy they say how as you depend more and more on it, you get stronger and the need for other food and drink diminishes. So it's very much an allusion to the Eucharist.
Yeah, it's just hitting me in the head right now, because, you know, in the Bible, Jesus says, I am the bread of life. Those who come to me will never hunger, and those who drink shall not thirst. So that's very, you know, under the radar, so to speak, that the elves are giving them this bread mm-hmm. of life so that they can continue and do their noble duty to prevent evil from continuing in the world. So
right.
that's amazing. Yeah, thank you. I know you wanted to mention how The Lord of the Rings really touched you and how that helped you grow closer to your faith. So, do you mind mentioning any favorite moments or just anything that comes to mind?
Well, I think the first thing was that just when I was in middle school, that's when I first started reading The Lord of the Rings. And I think reading about Tolkien's life and, you know, even before reading the story, I was kind of entranced by his story. He was an English professor, and I was influenced by his he made up many Elvish alphabets, and I've always been interested in writing and writing systems and language, so I think that down the line influenced me to study linguistics at Stony Brook. And The Lord of the Rings, just at the time, I wasn't Catholic, but it kind of set me up, I think.
Without you knowing.
Yeah, kind of. I remember thinking, oh, he's Catholic. How could Tolkien write all these beautiful things and he's wrong? Like, oh, no. But it's been interesting as a Catholic looking back at it now and rereading it and thinking about it now with a Catholic perspective to see just how, you know, thoroughly Catholic. You know, of course, it's Christian, but specifically Catholic, The Lord of the Rings is, and it's so organic and just wound in there, bound together through the story, very much like our real world.
Mm-hmm.
Faith is always there. So
without us knowing,
yeah.
You know, sometimes, yeah.
But I think the language, you know, his interest in language, and it's centrality to the story influenced me quite a bit. And of course, Tolkien himself as an example, you know, as a father and teacher, and he very much influenced me.
That's incredible. All the pieces are, you know, just coming together, because that influenced you later on with what you decided to study in mm-hmm. Stony Brook, and just your journey towards Catholicism, and just all these pieces are coming into play, and that's amazing. And I was just thinking also that your confirmation saint is Saint Thomas More, who is also Anglo-Saxon. Right.
Well, not Anglo-Saxon, but yeah, English.
English,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, a little later.
So yeah, I'll mention about that that saint and why you picked him, and for those of us who may not know about that saint, who he was and what happened.
Oh, sure. Well, he was the Lord Chancellor of England in the 1500s in 1529 under Henry VIII, and he was. This was at the time when Henry VIII was trying to get an annulment of his marriage and marry Anne Boleyn and have her queen. And, of course, you know, at that time England is Catholic, you know, most of Europe is Catholic. The Protestant Reformation has started in Germany, and Henry, King Henry and Thomas More are on the same side at that point, you know, writing together against heresies that are springing up in on the continent. And down the line, Thomas More doesn't take this oath of supremacy, which the King Henry wanted everyone to swear by, that made him, so in order to get the divorce, he had to make himself king, head of the church in England. So Thomas More wouldn't say yay or nay to it. He just kept silent and hoped that would be, you know, enough to imply that he, you know, was okay with it. But he didn't take the oath, and he and Bishop John Fisher of Rochester didn't either. And they're the two best known examples of people that didn't succumb to, you know, peer pressure or anything. And most people just took the oath to save their lives or just to stay on the king's good side. So in the end, they didn't, and Thomas More was beheaded at the Tower of London in 1535. Yeah, mm-hmm. And he was made a saint in the last century, I think in the 1930s.
Oh, wow.
1935.
And Saint John Fisher as well.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
Because he became, was he beheaded?
I'm not, he might have been, I'm not
sure,
certain. Yeah.
So the king, he wanted an annulment so that he can marry somebody else, essentially, to have...
marry Anne Boleyn.
To have a child,
yeah.
To have a boy,
yep.
Right? Is that how the story goes? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure.
In the end, Anne Boleyn gets, you know, she gets beheaded too, but that's a little later.
Yeah. But thank you for sharing. That's a noble story of courage of the saints that, you know, he stood up for what he believed in.
Yep.
And now he's a saint, so that's incredible.
Yeah, that's always influenced me, and even in high school I always thought that was an amazing story of someone he never went against his conscience, what he knew to be right,
mm-hmm.
and stuck with it, even though his own family, I think his daughter Margaret, wrote to him and said, just take the oath like we all did, you know, keep what you want, what you really believe in your heart, and just sign away. But he couldn't do it.
He was like, no, then that's, it's like you're giving
He'll have to be accountable before God at the end, Judgment Day. And he was very much into letting people, if they thought that's what they should do, then let them do it. He wasn't going to judge them, but he could only really hold himself accountable for what he did and said.
That's a really good reminder for all of us. And I know you were mentioning about the truth and the Dominican order, and that ties in really well with that. You know, he was searching for the truth in a way, mm-hmm. you know, St. Thomas More, and wanted to stick up for his belief in the truth, and that, no, you know, the king can't be the head of the church because he's not the pope, you know?
Right.
So that's really beautiful, inspiring story. So let's continue a little bit with the Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
we'll go back a little bit. So what else, so would you recommend for those who who haven't read the book to read it, and you know, what are some other reasons why to, you know, enjoy and mm-hmm. and read it?
Well, a lot of people start with The Hobbit, and that's quite a different style. That was the first book he wrote in 1937, and it deals with the adventures of Bilbo, who's the main character, and he finds the ring in that story, which comes to be of importance in the Lord of the Rings. But it's a different style. It's for some, you know, preferable to the Lord of the Rings. But I would say if you're going to try reading the Lord of the Rings, stick with it. Don't, you know, don't give up, because there's a lot of long, you know, poems, and some people see that and
get bored. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of, you know, what people seem to think are dry passages of just traveling I love it, but it's very descriptive. He describes everything, the countryside, and so you can really picture it as if it's right there. It really was, just as he said, you know, the forests and the mountains and all the valleys and cities that they visit in the story.
Mm. So can you start reading The Lord of the Rings without having read The Hobbit first?
You could, yeah, yeah.
You could just go straight.
There's sort of separate stories. You kind of pick up on a lot of what happened, the important parts of The Hobbit, while you're reading the beginning of The Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
But, I mean, it helps. And that's more of an easier children's book. You know, it's much more popular for that in that genre. But
okay.
Yeah, I would suggest it.
Oh, okay,
it's different different style, but yeah.
You get other things out of it, too, I'm
yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Good. Good, good. So let's also talk a little bit. I know we were mentioning before about the saints, and if you don't mind, I would like to share a little bit about my confirmation saint as well. Her name is Saint Teresa Benedicta of the Cross. It was really interesting how I picked this saint. You know, usually we're supposed to pray a little bit more and discern, like, which saint is for you when it's time for confirmation. And I was in religion class, I think, in, like, sixth grade, and I heard my teacher just mention, like, literally one or two sentences. She said, this is Saint Teresa of the Cross. She died in the concentration camp with her sister in Auschwitz during the time of the Nazis, and she was Catholic, and I think that's all that I heard, and I was like, oh, that's it, that's the one. Mm-hmm. And I think just inside of me, I was just inspired by the courage and the how she, like, became a martyr for her faith. Her story was that she was actually born Jewish. Her name was Edith Stein, and she was born Jewish, and during her life she studied philosophy, and she studied with some German philosophers, very known and prominent philosopher. I forget his name at the time, but she became atheist because of philosophy and her struggle and her search for the truth too. She became atheist, and then what happened was she read Saint Teresa of Avila's biography, I think it was, or autobiography, and she in her heart she felt really touched, and she's like, this is it, this is love, this is the truth, what she wrote about God and his love. And then she became a nun. I'm not sure, I believe a Carmelite nun, but she became a religious. Well, she converted, she became Catholic, and then she became a nun, which was amazing. And then her sister as well became a faithful person in the Catholic the faith. And then because I guess of their background, and the Nazis found out about them, and then they were taken to Auschwitz. And I believe Saint Teresa didn't fight that she was taken. I think one of her quotes was, "I'm willing to become like a martyr, or that's fine, you know, to be taken." So then they both died, and for me, I think their story of courage also was what really touched me, that that they became Catholic, and just you know, that they died for this very, like, noble thing, and that I was very blessed to be able to go last year to Poland, to Auschwitz, unfortunately, you know, to see the site and to walk around where the terrible things happen. And it was really, you know, you could see right there the terrible sin and just the evil that could exist in our world, you know, what happened in history. And I just, coming back home and just reflecting on that experience, walking around and just not really knowing where exactly she died or where exactly her gravesite is, but just we can be happy and rejoice in their example and like what they did for us, and just that God makes it all work for the good, and we just, I guess, can just pray for their souls, for their family, and just remember to try to like not let that happen again. So so that was, I guess, a little bit about the saint that I picked. And I just wanted to share a little bit about that and how that inspired me. And we all could live up to our saints, to our names, you know, and they help us and they guide us on this journey. We pray, it's like praying to a friend for help, and that's really good. And did you guys want to, I guess, did you guys know about Saint Teresa before today?
I did know a little bit about her. I actually also like went to Auschwitz and saw like the concentration camp there, and so I remember like them when we were there, like people talking about Saint Edith Stein and also Saint Maximilian Kolbe.
Right.
I think we saw like where his cell was. Mm-hmm. It is like it is crazy to like that they were willing to like give up their lives and like sacrifice so much like for the truth, for the faith. And to be like that witness, so it is really cool to be able to pray to them for courage and strength.
Yeah, Saint Maximilian Kolbe, he's another great one, right? Yeah. He was a Franciscan, and actually, I found out he also had a radio show, and he was, you know, speaking about the Lord, and I think was involved in like journalism and a newspaper. And he didn't fight as well when they were starting to take him. His friars were like, "Oh, hide! They're coming!" You know, like, you know, try to save yourself. And he was like, "No, it's okay. Like, if they come," and he just, I think, said a blessing and then went on his way. So it was, you know, if we were in that situation, you know, like, what would we do? Like, that's, you know, I guess that was God's grace to. He needed to go there to save the other person that he went. Another man was chosen to be killed, unfortunately, but he was a husband, and he said, "No, please, you know, don't take me." And then Father Saint Maximilian Kolbe, who's a priest, said, I'll do it, you know, he has a family." And that is just so incredible that in just one moment he knew the truth, and and they say that he lived for a long time in the starvation cell, and he would secretly celebrate Mass, and there would be singing from the bunk, and just all this terrible stuff going on around him, but it was just so incredible. Like, he's just such an inspiring saint that I wanted to mention as well. Yeah. So we're going to start wrapping up here. We have about 5 minutes, but again, if anything touched you about today's show, please feel free to call in or text in. We do have a minute or two. The call-in number again is 631-888-8811, and the text-in number is 516-784-6081. We have some great feedback here on Facebook Live. A lot of people are listening and watching, which is great. So I just wanted to say thank you all for listening, and we hope you have a great weekend. And I guess we'll just end with a little prayer. So in the name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. Amen. Amen. So God, we thank you for this day. And we just praise you for all your goodness and all the wonderful stories that were shared today. May you bless all young people and all the listeners and everyone here at the station. May they come to know your love and how much you love them. And may they all be brought closer to you. And through may Mother Mary wrap her mantle of protection around all of us. And may we experience her love as well. And we ask this through all the intercession of all the angels and saints, and especially the saints that were mentioned here today, Saint Bernadette, Saint Catherine of Siena, Saint Thomas More, Saint John Fisher, Saint Maximilian Kolbe, Saint Edith Stein, and all the saints. So thank you. And that's it. So thank you, listeners. God bless you, and have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you.
The spirit of sweet Jesus flows as a gentle breeze, and it fills our soul with gladness, and it puts our heart at ease. Whether working or at leisure, Jesus wants to show the way. We take the time to ask him.
Did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Let's thank Lord Jesus when we want to find our way.